As Iyanla Van Zandt once said, it's important that we share our experiences with other people. Your story will heal you, and your story will heal somebody else. At Project Sleep, we believe that your stories matter, which is why we train people with sleep disorders on how to share their stories through our Rising Voices program. This Rising Voices podcast series features a variety of firsthand stories from people living with sleep disorders around the world. Each person's story offers unique and important insights.
Welcome to Project Sleep's podcast. Project Sleep is a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to raising awareness and advocating for sleep health, sleep equity, and sleep disorders. I'm your host, Julie Flygar. We're so glad you're here as we work together towards making sleep cool. On this podcast, all guests express their own opinions. While medical diagnoses and treatment options are discussed for educational purposes, this information should not be taken as medical advice. Each person's experience is so unique, which is why it's so important to always consult your own medical team when making decisions about your own health. If you haven't done so yet, please hit the subscribe button so you never miss a Project Sleep podcast episode. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave us a rating or review wherever you listen so that we can reach more listeners and raise more awareness. Hello, everybody. We have a very special guest with us today. Rachel Nesmith is a wife, mother, and speaker. She was diagnosed with narcolepsy in February of 2002 and considers herself a real superhero, and she definitely is. As a Rising Voices of Narcolepsy trained speaker, she is sharing her story to raise awareness and to reduce stigma of this misunderstood neurological condition. So with that, please, Rachel, take it away.
Hello, thank you so much for coming to hear my story. I grew up in a town south of Dallas in Duncanville, Texas. And it was my mom, who is a speech pathologist, and my dad was a network engineer. And I grew up with my little sister, Katie, who was about Julie's age. And I remember having my beloved dog, Oreo, with a white stripe down his face, and Cookie dog, my favorite dog, and my favorite cat, Elwood, who was long, blue-haired, pushy, cushy, blues cat. And I had planned on going into physical therapy to become a physical therapist. And soon I realized I really stunk at chemistry. So I went with psychology. And I dreamed of becoming a clinical psychologist as I went further into my studies, because I didn't like the stigma attached to mental health. And I really wanted to help in any way I could to blur those lines of stigma. And I really wanted to look into, why do people behave the way they do? What's the nature of and the facts about mental illness? And why are people so comfortable with bad terminology, like saying someone's crazy or psycho? Those aren't really correct words to use. But when I transferred to Texas Women's University, that's when 9/11 happened. And 2 days later, I awoke with my bedroom completely transformed into being in the middle of World War III, one of my greatest fears. I could see my shadows of my family trying to get me out of the bed. Please, you got to get to the bomb shelter. Let's hurry up. And I was shaking and screaming. I was screaming in my head. And my husband's like, "What's going on? What's wrong?" And Ashley, he's like, "Honey, there's nothing there." I did not know what was going on. It just continued to be almost every night, all night, currents. And at one time, I was asleep in the bed, and I could feel rats crawling out my leg. I worked with rats, so they were common in my work. And I just could see that one looked hurt. I'm like, "Oh no, what's wrong?" And I fluffed the covers trying to find it, and it wasn't there. My husband knew at the time what was something was up. I didn't know it was going on, but I started looking it up, some things. And around the same time that I started having all these symptoms, a month later, whenever my husband would crack, then husband would crack a joke or say something really funny or got angry, my knees started to give out. And I'm like, oh, that's the weirdest feeling I ever had. And then I had that after it had been happening for a while, that's when I started going into it for longer periods of time, where if I laughed really, really hard several times in a row, I would go into being unable to move, but I was fully conscious, and it would last for 20 to 30 to 45 minutes. And in this state, I could hear everything that my family was saying, and I knew my dad didn't believe me that that symptom wasn't the fall, wasn't falling asleep, that that symptom was being conscious. I don't know what it is, but he said, Rachel, the secret word is pomegranate. And after I was able to move again, I said, Dad, the secret word is forbidden fruit. And I collapsed again. My grandma was going ballistic, going, oh my God. And my mom was like, don't laugh. Whatever you do, don't make her laugh. It was starting to get really out of control. And I started having trouble taking my notes in college. I was like, what is philosophy doing in my psychology notes? This is not correct. And I had to start taking a tape recorder. And I'm like, they're like, you're always falling asleep in class. Right? I'm like, I don't mean to. I'm really interested in us in like making A's. And I really didn't know what was going on, but I knew I had something to do with sleep at that point. My grandmother, Rita, was the one who really put all the symptoms together, connecting cataplexy and sleep paralysis, hypnagogic hallucinations, which I all identified by their name. But when my grandma said, those are all three of the four symptoms. Is there any, do you fall asleep? I'm like, yes. And that's when I knew I had most likely had something wrong called narcolepsy. I did go to a neurologist and he had a sleep study ordered, but at the time, my mom's health insurance excluded all sleeping disorders. So that meant no sleep study and therefore no treatment. I had to be changed onto my father's health insurance in order to be covered for sleeping disorders. That took from October until February, and I was struggling already so hard to keep up in college. And this was like, I was officially diagnosed February 2nd of 2002. And that's when my life really started to, I became even more interested in the brain. Narcolepsy is a chronic neurological disorder of the sleep-wake cycle. It's kind of like you're stuck in limbo between being asleep and awake at the same time, which can be horrifying. Because during REM sleep, you're paralyzed. Two types of narcolepsy, and that's type one with cataplexy, that would be me. And then there are many wonderful people without cataplexy who get the sleep attacks, but not so much that they don't have cataplexy. Other symptoms that are included are the excessive daytime sleepiness, which are the naps I was taking unintentionally during Christmas present opening. Cataplexy is what happened when I would laugh and collapse. Hypnagogic hypnomyopic hallucinations, which are parts of your dream world mixed with the real world. Sleep paralysis, where you're aware of some of your surroundings and you're unable to move. And disrupted nighttime sleep because we no longer have that clock to have sleep cycles anymore. And status cataplexicus at the very severe, like during pomegranate, when the sleep paralysis the cataplexy turns into more of extended sleep paralysis. The way that I was diagnosed was through the traditional means of nighttime polysomnography to see if there were any underlying conditions, whatever, how do I sleep? And the diagnostic test for narcolepsy the next day, or it's a nap study. Basically, it's like, how long can you stay awake? And it will test to see how fast you go into REM sleep. And a lot of times, you don't even know you're going into it. So that was a huge relief to get diagnosed. Treatment for narcolepsy includes stimulants, histamine-directed modifying agents. There's nighttime medication to help for helping people fall asleep at night and with cataplexy and the other auxiliary symptoms like sleep paralysis, antidepressants for cataplexy, and scheduled daytime naps are integral into helping maintain symptoms. My symptoms of narcolepsy have improved, especially like I'm not constantly in status cataplexicus. I still need a lot of help with things, but I am so grateful to be on my treatment that I can laugh. Due to the severity of my narcolepsy, I still haven't been able to drive though, because I get really bad cataplexy when I fight sleepiness, and that happens a lot at red lights. I do have some very supportive parents and a husband, a playful five-year-old, Savannah. I hope I'm raising her up right. She loves superheroes. She loves the nap pig. Nobody can tell her any different. And in this house, we celebrate it. She likes to take naps in the nap cave. And I think I'm raising a daughter that will be a really good person. I think that's in and of itself is probably something worthy in my life that I'm doing. And in the future, I believe that the future belongs to people who believe in the beauty of their dreams. This all was a dream for all of us for so long to really start having public advocacy. And together, we are doing it. We are making a dent in it. People used to laugh at me. I've had horrid comments made. And it just would hurt so bad during like the being in the ICU and struggling for life and hearing the ICU nurses laughing about narcolepsy, Dr. Mignol's dog. To hear them laughing, it made me feel so disgusted. And I couldn't talk very loud because my throat was so sore from being intubated at the time. So now people are more like asking, what is narcolepsy? They're curious. They're like, wait a minute, I think I've had cataplexy before. And I'm like, well, mate, you need to look and talk to a sleep physician and try to get a study. I take each day at a time and I focus on the silver linings of life, because in my mind, I think that people that go through hardships are superheroes, because you develop a sense of empathy that other people just don't have. And you're able to see, like when my mom is tired, I can see it. She's not trying to be sleepy. I can see it in people's faces. I'm like, are you tired, mom? I'm going to sit down and take a nap. She's like, how did you know? I'm like, I know that face. It's mine. It's so important to have that support system. This is central to Project Sleep, is that we definitely let people know that they're not alone, and that there are a lot of people living with invisible disabilities. And I love things that help bring people out of the shadows and reversing stigma. I remember a blind man in the Bible. He was blind, but he was the only one who saw that Jesus was Jesus. And that just transforms your whole life. People with disabilities really are superheroes. That's what I really firmly believe in. And I think together we can, working with a lot of other sleep heroes, we will definitely change this and rise above it. I'm really passionate about raising awareness. I've had fun watching some of my amateur videos over again from 2007 and on YouTube, and it's like, wow, it's like, but the time that I was from symptom onset to diagnosis usually isn't very timely like it was for myself. It's about 5 to 8 years of people going, this is a weird symptom, what's going on here? And it's so important that we educate awareness of narcolepsy. Why? Because I had all of the symptoms and I thought I was just a dizzy college student not getting enough sleep. That's what I thought. That's what we all thought. And then when I had all the other symptoms, it's like I had that one, and that one. And I never connected those to narcolepsy. I never connected sleep paralysis, hypnagogic hallucinations, or cataplexy to narcolepsy. And it took my since passed grandmother to point that out to me, going, you meet the criteria. I had to go into my doctor and say, I need to be tested for this because it's really, it's like, I need to find out what's wrong. And when you go in with that when you educate society about narcolepsy, and you know 50% of people are not diagnosed, this totally opens the door for people like teachers and all of us to go out and speak to teachers, to doctors, to nurses, to sleep medicine groups, pharmaceutical companies, because they need to make that connection as well so that we can get people treated and get them kids in school to stop being labeled as falsely lazy when they're really just sleeping. When they're not having attention deficit disorder, they're just trying to stay awake. These things are integral in educating society, and no one will change my mind about that. And I thank you for listening to my superhero origin story. And I really appreciate Project Sleep for this opportunity. I name myself Sleepy American. And this is for real, my nap cave.
Yay! Great job, Rachel!
Thank you.
Oh my gosh, that was just fantastic. It's really, really special to get to hear your origin story.
Are you facing sleep issues or sleep disorder? Project Sleep is now excited to have the Sleep Helpline, a nonprofit-led free national helpline providing personalized support and resources. You can reach out today to speak with a compassionate resource specialist who will listen and help provide accurate sleep disorders information, resources to help navigate daily living and the healthcare landscape, and connect you with a certified sleep center and patient support organizations. Contact the Sleep Helpline at 1-800-819-2043 or by filling out a form on our website at project-sleep.com.
Rachel, you've mentioned the nap cave a few times and about being a superhero. Do you have any favorite slogans that you've come up with as part of your awareness efforts? Or
yeah, I love narcolepsy, not alone. That's yours, and I embrace it. My favorite ones was that, and it was straight out of Hippocrates, and it's true, and it just hit me as funny, and I like nap time is my happy hour.
And I remember you did one for the holidays.
Tingle, cataplexy, tingle. And then I had gnome narcolepsy.
How do you come up with such creative things?
I like pop culture, and I like to find ways that will connect not only interest us, but other people are like, what? I go to my high school and everybody's like, what in the world is hypocretin? And I told everybody, and I told a doctor or two, the valedictorian in our class, I talked to him for an hour. He's an internist. He didn't know that much about narcolepsy. And now he does.
That's awesome. So as a mother of an active five-year-old, how is that relationship with your daughter? And you said that she takes naps with you or supports you, but does she know about your narcolepsy and stuff?
Yes, she knows about the narcolepsy. She tells her people she's trying. She will never do anything on command, but she'll talk up a storm once she gets to know you. Like she'll actually, like, she knows her mama has narcolepsy and goes to sleep a lot. My mom will come over. I'll be in status catapleticus, and my mom's like, how long has your mommy been in the state? And she'll say, long time. So she's aware that it's a sleeping disorder and that mommy isn't like mommy and dada. I don't have a sleep cycle. I wake up in the middle of the night. I have to, I'm medicated to get sleep at night without being afraid. Because I try to tell that sometimes parents that have children with narcolepsy are like, oh, isn't that hypnagogic hallucinations just a bad dream? I'm like, no, it's not just a bad dream. It's like virtual reality. You're really there. I can feel the pain. I can feel heat. It might be slightly diminished in the real sense, but it's very, very vivid, especially hallucinatory. Well, hallucinations, they call them that, but they're really dreams. Mm-hmm. But when you see someone in your doorway, a shadow, or hear someone screech at you or yell, then you're like, it's as if it's happening because you're stuck in limbo.
And can you tell us a little bit about your husband and how you guys met?
Yes, we met on, I met Carrie after my ex-husband left me. I didn't like being alone. I couldn't drive, so I had to do online dating, which a lot of people thought was really dangerous. But I was like, I don't want to be alone all my life. So several times, Carrie contacted me on plentyoffish.com. And at first, I thought he was just being really cheesy, saying, we could go get a puppy together, we should be together, baby. And I'm like, only if you'll take me out to a nice restaurant. So he did. And that date was so magical. It lasted till the next day. And we ate breakfast together. And that's when he said, you know, people don't usually hit it off like this. But this is even better than in the movies. And I was like, that's like he likes the same music. And the main thing that I did was that I refused anyone to, after several dates of having people say, hey, you know, what about the narcolepsy thing? I got so fed up with that. I said, that's not a character flaw. That makes me better. That is not a character flaw or a reason or an excuse not to date me. So I was really glad to stand up for myself. And that's when he admitted that he had sleep apnea. And he wasn't, his exes didn't like him wearing it. And I'm like, what? Breathing is sexy. So it was a really whirlwind romance. But for my 20s, we're so full of pain and poverty and foreclosure. And now I'm in a brand new house. And I have a daughter. And if I would have given up on life when I hurt the most during divorce, and I really, it really would have been a shame. But now I'm the comeback kid.
You are.
We all are.
Matthew would like to know, how has social media advocacy changed since your MySpace days?
It's changed a whole lot. We used to only have, with MySpace, there were MySpace groups, and we had Open Your Eyes to Narcolepsy. And that was, I co-run, designed and made that, designed that group with Michelle, with the one of the leaders of the narcolepsy support group on Facebook, Michelle Hernandez. And it's become so much more, there's so much more noise out there. I used to have I had a semi-viral video in 2007, 2008 of me in status catapleticus. And that was a very severe instance. And I got a lot of comments like demonic possession. But now there's like I love TikTok. I love Instagram, and I like to point out like help normal people to feel empathy by trying to make analogies that they might understand, like the staying awake for 72 hours and how I describe my symptoms as if it's happening to me as I think they're real. That really increases the empathy and say, hey, you know, I'm just like you. But the number one thing that I know about social media is that you learn to develop a very thick skin. Because people are mean online. One time someone said, you know what, there should be a narcoleptic holocaust. You shouldn't even be allowed to live. I had to block that comment and that person because I didn't want anybody else to see that. But I would say it's definitely grown in the venues and it's faster to come by. Everybody deals with social media now. When everybody used to laugh at MySpace, now Facebook and Instagram rule the world with Google.
All right. Matthew has another question. Your status cataplexicus, I don't know, I'm not even saying it correctly, but he says your description is excellent and is atypical for cataplexy. Do you experience that constantly?
I do, unmedicated. Unmedicated, I wouldn't want to live. When I run low on my medication, I start to panic.
Meryl asks, how do you control your cataplexy? Can you do anything to mitigate it when you feel it coming on?
I usually feel it coming on and I can feel it starting in the knees. But sometimes I can't control it. I'm definitely going to fall. Like one time while making a smoothie, it just spilled everywhere. And the other week when I was experiencing sleep paralysis in the bed, I was thrashing to get out of it. So I sometimes land and I hit my shoulder during cataplexy. And sometimes I have countless knee hurts. But basically, I try not to do anything too upsetting. And I tell people around me, don't stress me out too much because it'll start to happen. But with medication and the medications that I take, it's so much better than being in that state constantly, if that makes sense. I mean, I can talk privately about my personal treatment plan. If you are interested in different means, I would suggest talking to your sleep doctor specialist about those other methods of controlling cataplexy.
Great answer. So for now, I guess, thank you guys for tuning in. And thank you to Rachel tonight for sharing your story.
The Project Sleep Podcast is produced by Carver Sound Productions. For more information on podcast production services, visit carversoundproductions.com.